Okay. So in this week's parsha, we have the parsha of the Moadim. And as I was saying, because this week is Lag BaOmer, I'm going to remove my disguise, get back to normal, and anticipate the coming of Shavuos, which is our next holiday on the docket, coming up, please God, in a couple of weeks. So I wanted to discuss today the topic of Shavuos as it relates to tomorrow morning's Torah reading. And maybe it'll share some insight. We can have a new appreciation for an aspect, maybe a central aspect of Shavuos. Everybody just check in, even if we know who you are and you come all the time, just let us know. Oh, this is Sarah Mashkin, thank you.
So comes to know Sarah Mashkin.
Says the Pasuk. Usfartim lachem imachras haShabbos. We have to count from after Pesach, from the time Yom Aviyachemis Omer HaTenufa, Sheva Shabbosos Tamimus Tiena, from the day that you offer the Korban Omer. So the beginning of the count of Sfiras HaOmer is with the offering of the Omer of barley, a measure of barley in the Beis HaMikdash on the first day of Pesach. This discussion I'm going to leave cheap advertising here. You ready? In the article in the upcoming Torah to Go that you will find, please God, in your shul or in the neighborhood, we're going to be sending out in the Pesach to Go, in the Shavuos to Go pamphlets that hopefully everybody sees or gets a hold of someone. If you don't, please email me. There will be an article in there about this Sfiras HaOmer, beginning with this offering and concluding with the next, but that's not today's topic. You count from the Omer until the time you bring a new Korban Mincha, the Mincha Chadash al Hashem, Mimoshvoseichem, from the Moshavos, from Eretz Yisrael, Taviu Lechem, Tenufa, bread of waving, Shtaim, Shtei Esronim. You bring these two breads, they are referred to as the Shtei Halechem, the two breads which are offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And those breads are the centerpiece of the holiday of what we call Shavuos. The Torah actually doesn't refer to the upcoming holiday as Shavuos, it refers to it as Atzeres, the day of stopping, which, again, that's for the article, not for today. The highlight of that is these korbanos. I've got to take off my jacket. It's a little bit too far.
Well, Lisa's not here today to fight. Right. Hot and cold. Would you like to
follow? She's not here this morning. So you've got this holiday of Shavuos. Its centerpiece is the Shtei Alechem. And on those, if you look on line Yud Tes, no, let's go back to line Yud Ches, line Yud Ches in the first source, v'ikravtem al alechem, on those breads, meaning as an addendum to the breads, which are the fundamental part, you offer shivas kvasim tamimim, seven sheep, those are the animal sacrifices, and now skip down to line Chaf Aleph, says the Pasuk, ukrasim be'etzem ayom hazeh, and you should call out in the middle of this day, Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. It should be a day of a holiday. So it's not just a day of offering sacrifices, it becomes an actual day. The day itself is a holiday, akin to Pesach and Sukkot. So we have this holiday called Atzeres, Shavuos. On that day you bring this korban. Chukas Olam B'chol Moshvaseichem L'doroseichem. For all time, we're going to have this holiday. And it makes sense to me that this passage is brought here because it's in the section of the what we call the Parashas HaMoados, of the readings that we do on Yom Tov. This whole section of Parashas HaMoar is all about the holidays, right? So it makes sense that after we talk about Pesach, we're going to talk about Shavuos, and then we're going to talk about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Makes all good sense, right?
Yes.
So far, we're good, right? But then comes the next pasuk. Uvekutzrechem es ketzir artzechem. And when you harvest the harvest of your land, lo sechale paas sorcho liktor, do not destroy, do not completely harvest in its entirety the corner of your field, bikutzrecha, when you harvest, veleket kitzircha, and the sheaves, the collections of your harvest, lo salakate, do not collect those, laoni velager tazov osam, for the indigent and for the convert, for the person who's passing through, not this, it's not a ger tzedek, ger toshav, whatever, tazov osham, you should abandon them, ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. So we are taught here about the mitzvos of peya and leket. Peya being if a person has a field, this is my field, I have to leave over a corner. Now, the corner is not prescribed in terms of its size. It could be a gigantic corner, it could be a small corner, but it has to be, the Mishnah says, it's got to be on the corner, it's got to be left for the poor. In addition, there's a din of leket. If a person drops several sheaves, a single sheaf or two sheaves from his fingers. As he's collecting them, he has to leave them on the floor for the poor people. This was articulated in last week's parsha, in Parsha's Kedoshim, the mitzvahs of Leket, Shechecha, and Peah. Very nice mitzvahs. We love these mitzvahs. We love all mitzvahs. But there's something here that I simply do not understand. Forget the fact... What's that?
Why is it here?
Forget the fact that I already articulated these particular commandments in last week's parsha. But even if you want to tell me you're going to reiterate them because of the importance, the significance of these psukim, why, smack dab in the middle of the parsha Samoadim, are we talking about the Leket and the Shechecha and the Peah? I understand they're very nice mitzvahs, but why are they here?
What's next?
Next is the Hemshech of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. What's it doing here? So, Mestama, you're thinking...
It's just a holiday.
Ah, right.
Gathering.
Holiday of gathering. It's the time of gathering. So I would say this is probably the pshat. Maybe the simple understanding... I don't mean simplistic. I mean the simple understanding. Is that because Shavuos is the beginning of the harvest season, it's referred to as the Chag HaKatzir, as the time of the cutting. It's the time of the harvesting. So that... is the time when a person is going to be out in the field. They're going to be now, this begins the summer season of the cutting, and therefore, we're always reminding them, as you're about to start this new season, keep in mind these halachos, which relate to your practices in the field. What's that?
Katsir Artzuchim.
The cutting of your land.
The right is beginning.
Do they still practice that today in Israel?
I believe they do. Many of these laws that unfortunately we don't practice today in America are practiced in Israel. So the question is, though, I don't know, I'm not going to put down that answer, I like that answer, but I don't know if it really suffices for me, because it would seem that although, yes, it certainly is a mitzvah, which is kind of in tandem with the timing, it still, to me, doesn't belong in the Torah section, which is exclusively dedicated to the festivals. Like, it doesn't say in Sukkot time, which is the time of the gathering, it doesn't say, don't forget, remember to, you know, when you bring it in your house, make a bracha, or something like that. You know, or something like that. You know, it doesn't, no other mitzvos are articulated in terms of the Jewish calendar year based on these psukim. So there's something, it seems to me, there's something fundamental, there's something interesting that the Torah is hinting at, maybe not explicitly, not overtly, but on some subconscious level in this pasuk. Okay, that's question number one. Let's put that on the table. Question number two. If I were to ask you, what is the theme, the overarching theme of Shavuos? What's that?
The Torah.
The Matan Torah, right? That's what we say in the davening. Thank you, Reverend. Exactly. That's what we say in the davening. Now, even though, mind you, some of you are wondering, wait, it doesn't say that in the Torah, and it's true. From the Torah's perspective, we don't focus on Matan Torah, and there's probably some good reason for that. I once heard for a whole shiur on Rav Lichtenstein, Shalita, that this issue having to do with the fact that Matan Torah, from the Torah's perspective, on some level may have been a failure, because we reneged on our side of the bargain by bringing the golden calf. The Egel Hazav, it diminished what happened to Matan Torah, and therefore we come up after this parsha with a new covenant with Hashem, because we walked away from it, we abrogated it with the Egel. And that being said, and certainly in terms of the way the rabbis viewed it, the core of Shavuos is Matan Torah. So, that being said, I have an interesting phenomenon that I noticed, and that is that on Shavuos, we read a particular book, one of the Chamesh Megillos, one of the five books and the five stories in the Ksuvim, and that is the book of Rus. So take a look at source number two. The Medrash Rabbah has the following observation about Megillas Rus, and it's not trying to denigrate it, it's just trying to frame it, be honest. Let's call a spade a spade. Omer Bezeira. Reb Zeira teaches Megillah Zu, referring to the Megillah of Rus, Ein ba lo tuma v'lo tara. It has no laws regarding impurity and purity. Doesn't have anything about that. V'lo iser v'lo heter. And no laws regarding what is permitted and what is impermitted. V'lo melichtava. So why do they write down Megillas Rus? I'll tell you why. It's l'lamedcha, to teach you kama sachar tov l'gomlei chasadim. How much reward there is for those who are gomel chesed, who offer, who extend kindness to others. Why is that? Because in the Megillah of Rus, there's a lot of chesed going on. Rus does a chesed for Naomi, her mother-in-law, that even though Naomi says, you know, you got to go home after, the whole story, there was a family, Elimelech and Naomi, they had two sons, they married these two Moabite women, the two sons die. One of them, Orpah, goes home to Moab, and Rus does her mother-in-law a chesed by staying with her. Then Naomi reciprocates a chesed for her by helping raise her child. And Boaz, who was the chieftain of the time, the greatest scholar in Israel, does a chesed for Rus by marrying her, even though he was much older than her. Nobody else wanted to marry her because she was this Moabite girl, and there were concerns about her. And he said, no, I'm going to take the lead, which is, by the way, quite a bit of a lesson about leadership. Leadership is not about saying, it's about doing. But anyway, so Boaz does a chesed for Rus. Everybody's doing chesed for everybody else. The paupers of the time, the people who were working in the field, they did a chesed for her by giving her space to collect because she was poor. She came to collect in the field. It's a lot of chesed going around. And at the end of the story, what do we have? We have David ben Yishai. We have, ultimately, the birth of the greatest monarch ever, who is the precursor to the ultimate Messiah. And that's the end game of this story. That's the beautiful ending of the story. And that is, says the Medrash, Litein Schar Legomle Chasadim. It's beautiful. I'm into it. It's fabulous, right? But if that is the essence of the story of Rus, would you have put that on Shavuos? Maybe you put it on Purim, when people are giving Shalach Manos. We spoke about this once, the importance of giving on Purim. Maybe you put it on Sukkot, when people are collecting all their the grain, bringing it into their homes, the Chag HaOsif. But on Shavuos, I wonder. Yeah?
But the essence of Torah is to treat your neighbor as yourself.
All right, don't give away the whole shir before we get there. We're going to expand. That's exactly what I'd like to expand on, that theme, in terms of how. Maybe we'll take that and amplify it somewhat, maybe slightly, if we can take it one more step. But let's hold that thought. We're going to come back to it, which is exactly, you're picking it up on, you're already on source 7 and 8. That's it. This is the path of the people. They come, and they look ahead, cheat from the whole shir.
Rabbi Zeira, have the
same... You get a sheet. Oh my gosh. Let's see. I'm sorry.
Rabbi Zeira, have the same question on Kohelet Shir Shirin.
I don't know. I don't know enough Midrashim to know whether he asked that same question there. It happens to be just parenthetically. If you want to know a funny thing, even though Rabbi Zeira is telling us this story that there are no laws there, it happens to be that Megillas Rus teaches us more laws than any other Megillah. More laws than any other Megillah. It teaches us the laws, for example, of Shabbos clothes. The fact that you have to wear nicer clothes on Shabbos than you do otherwise. The Medrash says that because Rus was going to meet Boaz at night at the threshing floor. So Naomi says, "V'rachast v'sacht v'samsim v'saych alayach." You should get bathe and get changed and go down there and put clothing on you. Put your clothes on. So the Medrash says, "What does it mean? Put your clothes on." Obviously, she's going to wear clothing. Oh, so that's the reference. That's what the Gemara says. You should change your clothes. What do you mean, change your clothes? Change your clothes to Shabbos clothes. You're going to meet Boaz. You have to wear Shabbos clothes. So the Medrash says this is the source of wearing special clothing appropriate for Shabbos. This is also the source of kinyanim, because what happened was when Boaz actually went to acquire the field, what does it say? V'shalaf ishnalo. Each man took off his shoe, and they used that as an exchange. So, for example, when you go for mechiras chametz, what does the rabbi do? The rabbi gives you a pen or something, and he says, "Pick it up." You, by taking my... Because most rabbis are not going to give you their shoe, even though the Bible it does say the shoe. It would be interesting if you went to the rabbi and he gave you a shoe. The Gemara says, V'sholaf ishnalo. He takes something and he gives it to you. And that is what creates the acquisition. That's called a kinyan chalipin.
A handkerchief is cheaper than a shoe.
There you go. Handkerchief is much cheaper than a shoe.
As long as it's clean.
As long as it's clean. So that's, by the way, the same thing when you go to a wedding. When you go to a Jewish wedding, what happens before the wedding at the Chazon Ish? They say, oh, are you, the groom, willing to accept upon yourself all the monetary responsibilities of marriage? He says, yes. So the rabbi takes out a pen and he gives it to the Chazon to pick up on the behalf of the wife, because that's what we call Kalev Shalkona. It's on the Kabbalah's Kinyan. So this is also learned from. There's many things which are learned from the story of Rus, not for now. But
isn't he giving him the pen anyway to sign the ketubah?
No, the point is it's specifically the pen belonging to the rabbi, not the pen belonging to the guy. Is it Caleb Shalkona or Caleb?
Sign with his pen?
No. Forget the pen. Not a pen. A handkerchief. A yarmulke. If you were coming to me, if I was the rabbi and you were selling the chametz, I would take off my yarmulke. I would give it to you. You say, hold my yarmulke. This is actually an expensive yarmulke. So I would say, you hold this yarmulke. It has some value to it. This is an item. This is an item. So this is what my kalim. It's my vessels. It's my objects. So by you picking up my object, that is what we call a maisa kinyan, a kinyan of chalipin, of exchange of some sort. That is what seals the deal. It's the equivalent, say, of today in certain communities, a handshake. It's a formal acquisition, a mode of acquisition that's learned from the Megillah of Rus. But still,
you buy the kippah here?
No, this you can only get this in Israel. This is Rak Ba'aretz.
I just wanted to know, because if it was here, then I can understand why it was expensive.
No, because this is Avudat Yad.
I got a kippah man.
Oh, so I also, this is from Kippah Man, who's now was on Ben Yehuda. Yeah. He has fine kippahs from supporting the Israeli economy, all the girls who knit. I don't know which girl knitted this yarmulke, but she's doing pretty well.
No, I don't have to go to Jerusalem to get that kippah, because my daughter made me one with my name on
okay.
it.
Okay, there you
colors.
Go. Baruch Hashem.
Took her,
I have three boys. I have three boys. We're not holding by that. So maybe daughters-in-law. My wife won't do it. Okay, third question of the day. I want to point out a third. We're piling on. We have two questions. I want to do one more before we get to the issue that's going to round it all out together. Take a look at this Gemara in Yevamos. And this is Paskin Lahalacha and Shulchan Aruch. This is the way we rule. Ger Shebole His Gair Bizmanazeh. Someone who comes to convert today. Omrim Lo, we say to this potential convert, Mara Isa Shebosele His Gair. Why did you come to convert to become part of the Jewish people? Don't you know that the Jewish people today, the Jewish community, are devuyim, downtrodden, dechufim, schufin, ubuturafin, v'yisurin bon aleim? Don't you know that we are constantly persecuted? That we're being chased from one country to the next every couple of years? That we have Iran trying to kill us? That we have suicide bombers? Don't you know that? Why would you become part of this nation? Im Omer, if this potential convert says, Yodeani, I know that the Jewish people have a pathetic station in the world today. V'eini kedai, I'm still not worthy to become part of this wonderful community of people. Then we say, Mekablo so miyad, we accept the guy. We want to know, is he becoming a Jewish because he wants to be rich and famous? We tell, excuse me, if you want to be rich and famous, Judaism is not necessarily the avenue. If you want to become Jewish because you believe there's something unique about being part of a covenantal community, then, okay, Mekablon Oso Miyad. And now this person doesn't necessarily know very much about Judaism, so what do we tell him? Says the Gemara, Umodian Oso, we inform him, Miktas Mitzvos Kalos, a small sampling of difficult mitzvot, of easy mitzvos, Umiktas Mitzvos Chamuros. We tell him some of the hard mitzvos and some of the easy ones. We tell them a little bit about what are the easy mitzvahs. Let's say, Shiluach HaKein. If you have a bird in your nest that you come upon, you got to send away the mother bird, then you can take the eggs. That's pretty easy. Pretty easy. We tell them about mitzvahs chaburos, some of the challenging mitzvahs. We tell them about kibbut aveim, honoring your parents. Holy cow, is that a difficult mitzvah? Very difficult to fulfill. The Gemara says,
but the reward for both of them is the same.
Oh, okay. They came up with the same ones. Or Shabbos. Keeping Shabbos, very difficult. You have to be very knowledgeable. You have to really have a pursuit of knowledge to really fulfill Shabbos in its fullest. So we tell the guy, you want to be part of the Jewish community? Fine, but you got to know. Being part of the community, the definition of being Jewish means having responsibilities. I will make one digression here because I think it's a fundamental point. When we ask, what is Judaism about? Do you know that not one place in the Torah you will find the word right? The notion of rights, of a bill of rights, does not exist in Judaism. There are no rights. The word zechut does not appear in the Chumash. Zechuyot haprat, what we call in Hebrew today, personal rights, the Bill of Rights. There is no such thing. In Jewish law, there is no Bill of Rights. No one has rights. I have no rights, according to Halacha. What do I have? I have responsibilities. I have responsibilities. Now, by the way, those responsibilities also devolve upon other people. Let's say, if I was Chas V'Shalom, if I was a poor person, I don't have a right to ask for tzedakah, but everyone else has an obligation to give me tzedakah. I don't have a right as a parent to demand kavod, but my children have the obligation, the responsibility for kavod, so I'm going to teach them how to fulfill that responsibility. Fundamental distinction between the Western culture today and Judaism, which is why they're sometimes at odds with each other, because we've been raised in the intellectual climate of Western civilization, which is so much since the revolution of the Enlightenment has been so much based on rationality and the notion of rights, the Bill of Rights, personal liberty, the rights to happiness, pursuit of happiness, whatever you're going to call that, that's not a Jewish idea. Because what happens is what we're seeing today in many young people, younger than I, because now I have gray hair in my beard, my wife says, we're seeing a culture of entitlement. People saying, Magiali! It's coming to me. I have rights, and therefore those rights come with privileges. I'm privileged, so I'm entitled to certain things. In Judaism, no one is entitled to anything. We have to earn what we get.
You have to work for it. Very hard to get.
Absolutely. There's no such thing as an entitlement society. It happens to be that a Jewish society is incredibly benevolent. And it's not for now to talk about what a Jewish society would create in terms of healthcare responsibilities for people who can't afford it, and taking care of gemachs, free loan societies. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And caring for avelim. Let's say someone is a mourner. You look at a Jewish society, it's unbelievable. When a person, Rachman Litzlan, is sitting shiva for a parent, that people are coming over to their home, and they're bringing food, and they're taking care, and they're visiting, and they're taking out of their busy schedule to sit with them. That's not because the avel has an entitlement. That's because we as a community have a responsibility to that person. It's a very different... It may come with the same end result that the avel, the mourner, let's say in this case...
The intention is very different.
Totally different. It's a totally different society. And that's one of the challenges that we deal with today in terms of creating a society of responsibilities, not one which is based on entitlements.
Well, that it's also based on the Ten Commandments. And
all right, we'll get.
But that's the whole philosophy.
We'll get. That's what I'm saying.
We're gonna get
there in a second.
Should lift that source off.
But yeah, everyone's reading.
You have to hide it and tell them to lift it.
Exactly. That's the base from this. I cut it out from the Chumash. It's too big. We're gonna understand what that means in a minute.
Late.
So what's interesting to me though is if that's where the Gemara would have stopped, I would have understood it. Where you tell a potential convert a little bit about the mitzvahs, the easy ones and the hard ones, random sampling of mitzvahs. Ah, but guess what? It doesn't stop there. What does it conclude? Umodian oso, and we tell that person, the potential convert, end of source 3. Lek avon, the punishment for lacking, for missing out on, leket, shichacha, peya, and meiser ani. The commandments of the drop sheaves, you got to leave them for the poor. Shichacha, you forget a pile in the field, you leave it for the poor. Peya, leaving the corner. And the last one is meiser ani, giving a tithe to the poor. Interesting. Apparently, it's up to the discretion of the rabbi who is talking to the potential convert, what mitzvos he's going to talk to him about. Because it doesn't say in the Gemara, some hard ones and some easy ones. But one thing is not discretionary. According to the Gemara, you must tell the person about the laws of leket, shichacha, peya, and maaser ani. Why is it that those are what we're talking about? So I'd like to suggest that, as some of you have already alluded to, that the underpinnings of Yiddishkeit have to do with the principle of Gemilas Chassadim. Gemilas Chassadim, as we said, is this notion of a commitment to a community of kindness. And we see this, how do I know this? You know, even though the Pasuk says, V'yahavta l'reicha kamocha, which everybody's been yelling out from Source 7, thank you very much, but that's not where I want to bring it from, because Source 7, there are many commandments in the Torah, but look at Source 4, and this is probably well known to you. There's a story in the Gemara in Shabbos. This is the original text, Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. Says the Gemara, Shuv Maisa Benachri Echad. There was an incident with a non-Jewish man, a Gentile, Shabalaf Ne Shammai. He came to the great sage Shammai Amalei gayreni, convert me. Al manashe tilamdeni kol haTorah kula kshani omid al regel achas. I want to be converted on the basis of the fact that you're going to teach me the entire Torah while I am standing on one foot. That's what he said to the sage Shammai, standing on one foot. So he says to him, get out of here. Dachfo ba'amas habinyan shebiyado. He pushed him away with the ruler that was in his hand. And there's a specific role that this particular perspective plays in Judaism, the role of the Shammai and the Amas Habinyan, the measuring stick, is one particular avenue, which is not to be rejected. It's to be understood. Shammai said there is no place for that here. We will not accept that type of approach. And there's important value to that. But Hillel had a different story. Balafnei Hillel, he came to the great sage Hillel, Gairei, and he converted the man. Omar lo, what did he say to him? Da'alach sani, that which you despise for yourself, l'chavrach lo savid, do not do to someone else. And the Gemara says, said to him, Hillel, zuhi kola tarakula, this is the essence of everything. V'idach pirushihi zil gemor. The rest is commentary, go learn it. So I want to understand, why is it that according to Hillel, the principle of the alach sani l'chavrach lo savid, of treating others the way you want to be treated, why is that kola tarakula? You know, there are a lot of things in Torah. There are tefillin, tzitzis, Shabbos. What does that have to do with the alach sani l'chavrach lo savid? Yes?
Well, in my opinion, the Torah was written for simple people, and learned people, rich people, poor people, kids, adults.
Yep.
And it had to last through the ages. And so, I think if you have this simple, pure, 50,000-foot type of a statement, it can apply to anybody.
Oh, I agree. So my question is, though, right? How do you see that the entire Torah, the entire tapestry of the divine wisdom, which includes as diverse principles as wrapping black boxes on your arm that people on a plane think are... Someone said when the guy got... When they thought it was a bomb, then they thought it was an olfactory device. He had a hard time smelling, so the kid was wearing a black box on his head to help him smell. Like, somehow that is supposed to fit into this principle, because he says, Zui kol tarakula. The essence of Torah is in Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, but that, to me, at the first glance, I want to put out there that it speaks to the interpersonal aspects of Torah. Where do we see that it carries with it the entire tapestry of Torah? I'm wearing tzitzis now. Ta-da! I'm wearing tzitzis. What does this have to do? Maybe it has to do with, I used to do this when I was in shul. My younger brother, when he was sitting next to me, I used to take the talus strings and put it in his ear to make him nervous and jittery. But that's the only thing I can think of in terms of tzitzis that has anything to do with don't
you
do.
You really bad, Rabbi. That was terrible.
Sibling
that's what
Bible.
We were doing in shul those days.
So
I want to know, what does this have to do? So I'm wondering the following source. We definitely know that there is a concept of Gemilas Chasadim in Source 5, which we don't have time for today, talks about the notion of going beyond the letter of the law. But it would seem to me, and I was thinking about this week, it actually, Baruch Hashem, I was developing this idea, that maybe sometimes we don't realize that there are actually two motivators for the mitzvah of Gemilas Chasadim, for the way we treat other people. There might be two motivators. Let's look at Source 6. Says the Rambam, this is Maimonides in Hilchos Deos. Yet one more plug. You ready? This is a plug, official plug, on the record. Those of you who do not know, the Kollel has started a lunch and learn on Tuesdays. I don't know if anybody gets or reads their Friday emails from the Kollel, or if you just delete them right away. The Kollel started a lunch and learn. So I don't know if anybody is available to meet for a lunch and learn at 12 o'clock. We're doing it every week, Tuesdays at noon. Vern, are you available Tuesdays at noon?
I may be.
I'll ask you why. Because I would invite you, but the chop is you don't have to go anywhere. You bring the lunch. The lunch and learn is online. It's in your office. You want to come to lunch and learn? Sit down at your computer. We did this past week. We started our series. It was just an introduction. Every week for a half hour from 12 to 12:30, we're doing a series on Maimonides, the Rambam and the Mishneh Torah and the Yad Chazaka. You bring the lunch, we bring the learn. You click on a link that you get from the Kollel, and you click on that link. You can see me and hear me, and there is a source sheet, which you download. It's right on your computer. And for a half hour, we have our lunch and learn. But this week on the Lunch and Learn, there was one guy who was there from Toronto. Last time, there was somebody from New York. One guy works in Vancouver. There are a couple of guys from downtown. Everybody, we're all learning together. And you can see on the side, apparently somebody was doodling on the source sheet on their computer, and everybody else saw that this guy was doodling on the source sheet. So someone made a comment, because you can ask questions during the class. Someone made a comment, if you could please stop doodling, you're doodling on my source sheet. Because it's a virtual source sheet. It's really an amazing thing. So if you do not get the Kollel emails, let me know. But you're going to get it this morning on the Tuesday page. And every day there's something going on from the Kollel. On Tuesday there's a link where you can link up. Join us at every week, Tuesdays at noon, for Maimonides over lunch. And you can get last week's introduction if you want a fantastic introduction based on the teachings of Dr. Isidore Twersky from Harvard. That'll be on the link, please God, this morning. So, what's that? This firewall?
Yeah, I can't get anything on my computer.
So you know what you could do? We also have a phone in. There were like 10 people who called in on the phone. Because if some people, let's say there's a guy driving in the car, one of the doctors who goes from one place to another, he drives from one office to the other on Tuesdays, so he was in the car. So we set up a conference call line so that people, who, if they want to call in to get the Rambam in the car, they can get the Rambam in the car. Who wouldn't want Rambam in the car, right?
That's Rambam to go.
Rambam to go, exactly. So that's just a small advertisement. This is the Rambam, not this particular Rambam necessarily, but we're doing this week the book of Day of Mada, the Rambam's foundations of intellectual principles, emotional and moral ethical principles. This is the laws of ethical behavior. So the Rambam says the following in source 6. Umitzuvim anu laleches bedrachim elo habeinonim. The Rambam, Maimonides, is one who articulates, as some of you know, the principle of the golden mean. In terms of our ethical moorings, you can't eat too much, you can't eat too little. You can't be too wealthy, you can't be too poor. You have to try to strive, says the Rambam, for the golden mean. Vehim adrachim atovim vayisharim, and these are the proper paths. Why does the Rambam think that the golden mean is worthwhile? As he explains. Shenemar, second line, v'halachta bedrachav. Ah, the reason we're supposed to walk the golden mean, because the divine entity, Hashem, teaches us to be balanced. He is, the way that He treats the world is with a perfect balance. By the way, you can see that in nature. God creates a natural balance between sunlight and rain, warmth, cold. Kach lomdu mitzvah pirish mitzvah zu. What did we learn from the principle of v'halachta bedrachav, which literally means you should walk in His ways, capital H on the His. Kach lomdu mitzvah mitzvah zu. Mahu nikra chanun. Just as God is called chanun, kind, af atoheye chanun. So too we should be kind. Notice, by the way, the Rambam does not say mahu chanun, just like God is kind. Because the Rambam says, you never met God. You cannot understand what God is. You can understand the way He is called. So the Rambam says, God relates to us with kindness, so we should imitate that. Imitatio Dei. We should act with kindness. Yeah?
Like emulation of 13 attributes.
Exactly. This is the source of it. This is it. If you want to know where that comes from, you are looking at it. This is right here. This is the Rambam's principle of emulating the 13 attributes of Hashem. Mahu chanun, right? Hashem, Hashem, keil, rachum, v'chanun. Just like God is merciful, is kind. Mahu nikra rachum. He is the one of the attributes is He is kind, He is merciful. Afatah haye rachum. Mahu nikra kadosh. Afatah haye kadosh. So too, we should also be holy. And further, he says, and these are all the appellations of God: Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, Tzadik, Yoshar, Tomim, Gibor, V'Chazak. All of these things, Lohodia, to teach us She'elu Adrachim Tovim V'Yisharim V'Chayv Adam Lahanig Atzmo Behem Uli Damos Kefi Chocham. We should imitate God. So, what does the Medrash say in this in a homiletic sense? What does Hashem do? He is Mavakir Cholim, right? Avram Avinu. Third day after his circumcision, he's sitting in his tent. Who comes to visit him? Hashem. God vayira elav Hashem be'eloni mamre. God appears to Avraham Avinu. So what's God doing according to the Midrashic interpretation? He's fulfilling the mitzvah, quote-unquote, of Bikur Cholim. Hashem, in the way that He relates to the world, is demonstrating to us how we should behave. That's one principle. The second principle is V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. That's Pasuk in 7. And the Targum Yonasan actually has a different translation than the literal translation, which is where Hillel is getting it from. The words in the Pasuk literally means, you should love to your friend as if to yourself. The Targum Yonasan says, Uderachame lechavrach deman ant sani lach lo savad le. That which you don't want to yourself, don't do to somebody else. It's a little bit of a different formulation, but the principle is the same, is that there's this notion of reciprocity. I don't want to do to you, I shouldn't do to you what I wouldn't want done to myself. So the Rambam, take a look in Source 9, this is the Rambam in Hilchos Avil, the Laws of Mourners, says the Rambam, Mitzvas aseh shel devrayim, levaker cholim. There is a rabbinic requirement, a rabbinic commandment, to visit the sick, ulanachem avelim, and to comfort the mourners, ulahotzi ames, and to bury the dead, ulahachnis hakala, and to bring the kala, to create a wedding for those women who can't afford to make a wedding, ulalavos haorchim, and to accompany your guests, velasuk b'kol tzarkei hakvura, and to help provide for a funeral for someone who can't afford it. That's why there's today, I don't know if there is one in Chicago, but I know in the New York area they have the Free Burial Society. For Jews, there are, what's that?
Where do you use that language, Lohotzi Ames?
Lohotzi Ames, to take him out to the cemetery. I don't know, do they have, I'm sure they must have something like that. They have? So we live in New Jersey, I remember that there's a thing, they used to take students from schools to cemeteries for upkeep. And they used to bury Nebuch, a Jewish person died somewhere in a hospital, and they couldn't find any family. So what do? This is a charity. The Hotzalas Hameis. They had to pay for a burial plot for these indigent Jews. Says the Rambam, so by the way, then the Rambam gives it, the fourth line down, the full caveat. Ve'eluhein, and these are gemilos chasadim shebegufo. These are the kindnesses that you do with your body, she'ein lam shiur, that do not have any shiur. They don't have any limit. We can be always involved in these things. So one thing that you're probably wondering, wait a second, why did I say, says the Rambam, that these are rabbinic commandments? So the Rambam explains. It says, "Afal pi shekol mitzvos elu." Even though these specific requirements are midivrayim, the rabbis, it doesn't say in the Torah anywhere, you must visit the sick, you must bury the dead. So therefore, the rabbis articulated specifically, you must visit the sick. However, says the Rambam, "Harihim bechlal v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha." When you do those, you are in fulfillment of the general principle of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. So it seemed to me there are two different sources for how to fulfill this concept of Gemilas Chasadim. One way is Imitatio Dei, just like Hashem does Chasadim for people, so too we do. The other source is V'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. And there's a difference between these two sources, I would suggest. The difference is that in the first case, the responsibility of developing my Gemilas Chasadim has nothing to do with other people. It doesn't really relate to the other people at all as subjects. They're objects. In the first case, I am going to do Chesed, I'm going to do Gemilas Chasadim because I have to imitate God. Not because I even have any relationship or any connection to that person. They're not the subject of the discussion, they're the object. They become like the lulav. I'm shaking the lulav. I'm giving the poor person charity because I'm shaking the lulav. In the second case, it's a different idea. It's that ma'ida alach sani l'chavach l'savet. There's a certain reciprocal relationship here. And this was articulated to me by my Rebbe from YU, Rav Herschel Schechter, and he has this written in an essay, that the notion of reciprocity plays a very important concept in the mitzvahs of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. What do we say? The Pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, why should you give tzedakah? Why give tzedakah? So the Pasuk says, "Ki begalal hadavar hazeh yivarechecha Hashem Elokecha." Because of this thing that you do, that you give charity to somebody else, God will bless you. So the Medrash says something fascinating. The word "begalal" because of is related to the word galgal, wheel. So the Medrash says, poverty is a galgal hachozer ba'olam. The wheel of poverty circles. And the Medrash says, one day, one generation, such and such a family needs charity. Fast forward 100 years, somebody else's family needs it, and they're able to give it. The Medrash says, mitzvos that are ben adam lachavero are reciprocal. In a certain sense, I give you, I do something for you, because I know that I would want the same thing done for me. If chas v'shalom, I was in need of halvoyas hames, I would want that done for me. So I'm going to do halvoyas hames for somebody else to create a reciprocal community. This, by the way, explains why certain mitzvos are called chesed shel emes. Commandments, they are mitzvos of truth. Why? Because, says Rashi, they're chesed shel emes, you will never get anything back. If I bury a person who has no relatives, has no family, I am not going to receive anything
in return.
That's called a chesed shel emes. Well, what is emes? Whose name, says the Talmud, is emes? Hashem. God's name is truth. So there are two aspects of every kindness. There is the aspect of chesed that I expect, even if not from you, the concept that I expect reciprocity, that social interactions are based on the notion of reciprocity. But then there is the emes aspect, the divine aspect, which is irrespective. I would suggest that might be the difference between the source of imitatio Dei and the source of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha tells me we have this reciprocal relationship, and it's almost as if I owe you and you owe me. We have these responsibilities. So much so, says the Radvaz in Source 10, that when it comes to charity, you can coerce people to give charity. Why? Because the social responsibility is everyone has to give charity, even though there are various legal reasons why the Gemara Tosis points out maybe you shouldn't be kofan tzedakah, says the Radvaz, it's not true. You force people to give charity. The rabbis, the rabbinical court can force people to give charity. Why? Because just like, let's say, if I worked for you in a business, the rabbis would force you to pay me because you are obligated to pay me. Or if I borrowed money from you, the rabbis would coerce me to pay that money back because I am obligated. There's a contractual obligation that I have to take care of. So too, when it comes to Gemilas Chasadim, there is a contractual social contract from the Torah's perspective that I have to take care of. But I would say that's only from the side of the reciprocal relationship. It is like give and take, but it's not from the side of chesed shel emes, of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So let's say you have the following conflict. Let's say you have two parties walking on the street, going to do a mitzvah. You have a wedding party, and then you have a funeral. Funeral which is really a chesed shel emes. Even though it's not fully, because you want somebody else to do a funeral for you, again, lo aleinu, but it's more of a chesed shel emes than a funeral and than a wedding. And the question is, who takes precedence to the crossroads? They're both going to do a mitzvah. Who goes first? Which mitzvah goes first? What would you say?
The funeral.
You would think that the funeral goes first because
of... No, I think the wedding, because that's the future.
Why do you say wedding goes first?
Because that's what I was told.
Right, because that's what Gemara says in Source 11. The Gemara says, Ma'virus ames milifne akala. You put the wedding first. Why do you put the wedding first? The mitzvah of halvoyas hames is incredible mitzvah. Well, because the mitzvah of halvoyas hames is primarily a chesed shel emes. It's only between you and Hashem. The other one has both aspects. It has both the aspect of the mitzvah of imitating God, of doing a kindness, and it has the reciprocal relationship, the human responsibility of a live person. Because that person is alive, the husband, the wife, they're alive, they now have a contractual obligation, as it were, to do a chesed for me. So that obligation, that sense of mutual responsibility, that trumps, says Rav Schechter, those two aspects trump the one aspect of halvoya semes. That's what Rav Schechter writes in the article.
But you can really argue it the other way, too. In other words, a chesed shel emes is of higher value.
It might be of higher value, but there is only one source of obligation.
Okay.
Here we're saying there are two. So what I'm getting from this is...
In Kohelet, where we have the... Better to go to a...
Tov lechaz l'beis, evil meiz lechaz l'beis mishnah. Absolutely. It's certainly better for your moral conscience to develop a sense of perspective on the world to go to a shiva house than it is to go to a wedding. I walk out from a shiva house, I'm introspective. I walk out of a wedding, I'm sweaty. Oh, that's a different experience. So now let's bring, entire interest of time, I want to bring it back now. So now maybe I understand very well where we're all going with this. The notion of chesed is not just about, it's not just another mitzvah. It really belies the entire Torah. Because it encapsulates both our relationship with Hashem, the imitatio Dei, the connection to God, the spiritual connection, which is going to be found in tzitzis, tefillin, mezuzah, that have nothing to do with another person. But that's connecting to God, imitating Hashem, v'alachta b'drachav, connecting to God, bo sidbak, that aspect of the mitzvah, that's shaveh, that's equivalent. It's both here and in the mitzvahs of tefillin and mezuzah. They're all the same. And then there's the other aspect of the mitzvah of Gemilas Chassadim, which is what we're more familiar with, which is the entire corpus of mitzvos Beinanu Lachaveiro, these interpersonal mitzvos. Maybe now we can understand why Hillel said to the guy that the essence of everything is mitzvah of Da'alach Sani Lachavrach Losavit. Don't do to somebody else what you wouldn't want done to yourself. The notion of reciprocity, because the reciprocity includes both categories. Like the Ramban says, there are two tablets. Tablet number one, those are mitzvos between us and God. Tabula number two, it's our mitzvahs between other people. And what we're suggesting right now is that the notion of chesed, of proactive kindness for other people, that actually encapsulates both. Therefore, that's the root of the entire Torah. Now we understand when a ger comes to convert, what do we have to tell him? We got to tell him a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little smorgasbord. But at the core, we have to tell him, you have to understand that there are mitzvahs of Gemilas Chassadim, of leaving the corner of the field, of giving my Sirani, because that encapsulates the Kol HaTorah Kula. That's what Hillel was saying, is that if you understand both models, you know that there is a reason for doing it because of Velachta B'drachav, that's going to make sure you're inspired to wear tzitzis, because the tzitzis, the blue, back in the day, the blue is going to remind you of the Kisei HaKavod. It's going to remind you of your divine responsibilities. And it's also going to, you know, and the other half of it, the mitzvah ben Ad L'Chaver, are going to make sure you treat other people carefully. Now maybe we could suggest a clincher, and that is that the Gemara learns the model of conversion from Har Sinai.
What?
From Har Sinai. When the Jews came to Sinai, they weren't yet the Jewish people. At Sinai, they accepted the mitzvos, they offered a karbon, they did mila in Mitzrayim before they got there, and they had to go to the mikvah before they could offer their karbanos. And the Gemara says those are the four things that we learn that are essential for a ger. If today, we don't have karbanos today, so that's not necessary. The Gemara says this is gzeiras hakasav. The Torah explicitly says it's not mandatory all times. But a ger who comes today, he has to do bris mila, that we did. They have to jump in the mikvah, that we did. The Gemara learns that before they went to Har Sinai, they all jumped in the mikvah, and we had to accept the commandments. And that we did at Har Sinai.
Mass conversion.
It was a gigantic conversion of the entire Jewish people. Oh. So Shavuos is the time of us accepting the Torah, meaning converting as a unity to Yiddishkeit. So what's the core? When you accept Judaism, what is the first thing that you're focusing on? You're focusing on the realm of Gemilas Chassadim. So maybe the reason why we read Rus, said Rav Schechter, is because if Shavuos is about accepting Judaism, and Judaism at its heart is about Gemilas Chassadim, so that's why Litein Schar Tov L'Gom LeChassadim. The reason we read the book is because if you want to know what you tell a person when they come become Jewish, when every year we go back to the same place to reassess our relationship to Yiddishkeit, we think about Gemilas Chassadim, and we read the story of Rus. And now we can answer the first question. Why does the Torah begin... Why does the Torah conclude, the portion of the Moados regarding Shavuos with the story of Leket Shechach, Leket and Peah? Now we have our answer. We could suggest that the Torah is hinting to the fact that on the holiday of Shavuos, there's a subconscious theme here, and that is the theme of Gemilas Chassadim. That's the theme of Gerus, because this is what you're going to tell the Ger. When he comes to convert, you're going to tell him, Avon Leket Shechach, Peah and Meiser Ani. That's the essence of Yiddishkeit. But not because Yiddishkeit is only focused on interpersonal relationships, but because interpersonal relationships themselves are rooted in these two pillars. The one being the Bein Adam LaMakom, the Imitatio Dei of Valach the Bedrachav, and the other being the reciprocal responsibility of creating the inspired community. God gave us the world to create it, to inspire it. So perhaps in that light we can understand the coming holiday of Shavuos. You want to know what the essence of Shavuos might be, a perspective on the essence of Shavuos, it's actually Gemilas Chasadim. Thank you very much. Yashar Koyach, a good Shabbos. Anybody who doesn't get the Kol email, I'll be happy to put it on with this pad. I'll welcome you on Tuesday if you chime in, either on the phone or on the internet. You're more than welcome.